call to orders the committee of the whole meeting Wednesday, January 6th, 2021, 7 p.m.
We have roll call, please.
Warden Weir.
Present.
Deputy Warden Fuller.
Present.
Counselor Baker.
Present.
Counselor Mailman.
Present.
Counselor Malloy.
Present.
And Counselor Zink.
Mine's not working.
Present.
Thank you, Marissa. Any additions to the agenda?
So Warden, I have one. I'd like to add an in-camera session on a legal matter.
Okay, we'll add that as 9D, in-camera session, legal matters. We have a motion to approve the last agenda, or sorry. We have a motion to approve the agenda with addition, please.
I'll move the approval of the agenda with the one addition.
I'll second.
Motion by Counselor Baker and seconded by Deputy Warden Fuller to accept approval of the agenda. Could we have approval of the minutes from the committee meeting held December 16th, 2020?
I'll make that motion, Counselor Malloy.
I'll second that motion, Counselor Zink.
Motion by Counselor Malloy, seconded by Counselor Zink to approval of the minutes from committee meeting held December 16th, 2020. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Is there any business arising from the minutes? No business. We'll move on to 7, correspondence. We have a letter from the Epilepsy Association of the Maritimes wanting us to do the ribbon, the purple ribbon in March again. I don't think we need to vote on it, but if everybody has consensus that we do that, I think that we'll just go ahead with that. Okay. We will do the ribbon for the Epilepsy Association of the Maritimes in March. A, we have a presentation tonight from Atlantic Gold. Maybe we'll just do a round table and then you guys can introduce yourselves.
Sure.
Okay. Yeah, sir. I'm Counselor Zink for District 2, Eaton City and Lisbon area.
Hello, Counselor.
Counselor Malloy, District 4, and that's Indian Harbor Lake, Jordanville, St. Mary's River, and Sonora.
Courtney Mailman, Counselor Courtney Mailman for District 1, which is Sherbrooke.
Warden Weir, I'm the District 3-5, and that's it.
Harvey Dillon, I'm in CAO. James Fuller, I'm the councilman for District 6, which is Goshen, that area there.
Everett Baker, I'm the District 7 councilor, Liscom area, Goldenville, Chagogan, and the nursing home here. Okay.
Mary Frazier, the Director of Finance.
Hello, Mary.
Marissa Jordan, Municipal Clerk.
I'm Liv Brownlee, I'm General Manager of Atlantic Operations.
Justin O'Leary, I'm the Communications Manager for Atlantic Operations.
Jim Allard, Manager of Environment and Community for Atlantic Gold.
Okay, so please, we'll watch your presentation.
Okay. Do I turn this on?
Yeah, you can turn that on.
Great. Okay, well, first off, thank you to Warden Weir and the rest of the council for the invitation and the opportunity to present to you tonight. Before starting, we would like to begin by acknowledging that we are in Mi'kma'ki, the ancestral and unceded territory of the Mi'kmaq people. The territory is covered by the Treaties of Peace and Friendship, which Mi'kmaq Maliseet and Passamaquoddy peoples first signed with the British Crown in 1726. The treaties did not deal with surrender of lands and resources, but in fact recognized Mi'kmaq and Maliseet title and established the rules for what was going to be an ongoing relationship between nations. So I will start by saying the presentation is relatively short, but I assume there's going to be some discussion to come. So we wanted to sort of give an outline and a brief presentation, and then leave it open for discussion after that. But certainly, if you feel the need to interject, do so, because it's an open discussion here. So, and I have to control my own slides, so this will be interesting. Let's see if we can do this. Okay. So it has been some time since Atlantic Gold has appeared in front of council, so I thought it would be best to provide an update as follows. We've done our introductions, of course, but we'll look at an overview of St. Barbara Limited, an update on our current operations at Moose River, the events since our last appearance at St. Mary's Council, an update on Cochrane Hill, the Cochrane Hill Gold Mine Project, and the activities within the St. Mary's region, and sort of a proposed path forward with council as we move forward, and then of course the questions and general discussion. There. So I did want to provide an overview of St. Barbara. As you may be aware, in July 2019, Atlantic Gold was acquired by St. Barbara, and St. Barbara is a gold mining company based in Melbourne, Australia. We do have two additional sites. One is in Leonora in Western Australia. That's an underground mine that currently employs 188 people and 468 contractors, and they produced about 171,000 ounces of gold in 2020. Additionally, they have Simbiri, which is in Papua New Guinea. That's a surface mine like Moose River or Atlantic Gold's other projects, and they have 747 employees with 428 contractors, and they produced about 104,000 ounces of gold in 2020. So that's a roughly analogous to Moose River. And St. Barbara has commitments to a value system that promotes sustainable operations, and those commitments are focused in five areas: safety always, empowering people and diverse teams, building stronger communities, respecting our environment, and growing sustainably. And I'll cover some of those in the presentation as we go forward. So I did want to provide an update on our Moose River operations, just so everybody's aware, because that is, of course, at this point our functioning mine site. So Moose River is currently in its fourth full year of production. Year one was 90,500 ounces of gold. Year two was about 98,000, and this year has been 2021. In 2020, we produced about 107,000 ounces as well. The safety record at our Moose River location is a positive one, and we always continue to improve. The Moose River mine also has been able to continue to operate safely through the COVID-19 pandemic, with no loss of employment, and through some very stringent protocols. So we have brought in some intensive screening protocols that have, even as the province has sort of lessened their restrictions, we kept ours or increased ours because we wanted to make sure we kept our staff and their families and the communities around where we operate safe. And we currently have about 320 full-time staff at Moose River. There's 98% of them are local, and they make an average of about $68,000 a year. And we also have local contractors, 40 to 60, working at the site at all times. So I did want to, because there are some new faces around the table at council, I did want to just provide a little overview. And I mean, compared to when we were, I guess our company was at council the last time, I'm a new face. And I feel like I've been here forever. I did want to provide some milestones on what's happened in the St. Mary's region. So in September 2018, Atlantic Gold, before the acquisition by St. Barbara, submitted a project description to the Impact Assessment Agency of Canada, otherwise known as IAC, to begin the process of commissioning a surface gold mine at Cochrane Hill, where historic gold mining practices had taken place decades earlier. As part of the process, local residents and groups were engaged in the process, including meetings with both organizations and the public in general. Those meetings were designed to inform the environmental impact statement, which is the next submission for the project to the federal and provincial governments. After developing a full understanding of the natural environment around the St. Mary's River and listening to the concerns of local residents and groups, It was determined that a slate of exhaustive scientific and engineering studies were to be conducted, and they're currently underway, and that's, you know, over and above all the studies that, that would normally be conducted anyway. The database and modeling results obtained would allow for the optimal design and construction of a project that is based on best available technology and to be fully protective of the environment and people. So in 2018 as well, and you may be aware of this, but the Cochrane Hill Community Liaison Committee was formed. That continues to meet to this day, and local residents are represented, and there's also one permanent spot that's held by the St. Mary's River Association. One other is that we opened the office in St. Mary, or sorry, in Sherbrooke. Our company opened that in early 2019. I just wanted to give, you know, the purpose of the space was to have a location to engage with the local community, answer questions, and address concerns. So since that time, you see a little graph there. That's sort of a graph of the visits that have happened since September 2019. You'll see, of course, the gap between April and June, where the world seemed to shut down for a little while due to COVID-19, and we did open the office back up in July. So the Sherbrooke office has almost 50 individual and group visits between January and December of 2020, and that's with 3 months down due to COVID. There have been over 100 visits to the office since it opened in 2019, and 400 total communications have emanated from the Sherbrooke office in 2020. So the office is still located at the old fire hall just down the street. It's open on Tuesdays and Fridays, and please, we welcome you. We welcome you to send any of the constituents that you have that have questions down to have them answered. So please do that. And of course, all COVID-19 protocols are being followed there as well. So.
I want to mention the positive neutral.
Oh yes, here. Yeah. So and as you'll see, is that the interactions graph there has you know, green being positive, blue being neutral, and red being negative. So the conversations with the community at this point have been deemed to be positive by our staff member who's down there. So I did want to provide an update, and I know you obviously here tonight would like an update on the Cochrane Hill Gold Mine project. So Atlantic Operations have been focused on bringing Beaver Dam, 15-mile stream, and Cochrane Hill into construction and production. With one mine currently operating and three more in development, we have to be, as a company, thoughtful about where we focus our internal resources. Beaver Dam and 15-mile stream are, of course, further along in the IAC federal and provincial approvals process, and those projects are receiving the majority of our focus currently. But scientific and environmental studies are still ongoing for Cochrane Hill, and the CLC still continues to meet on a regular basis, especially during COVID, but on an ongoing basis. We've also been pleased and proud to be a supportive member of the community, and our company has built relationships with local groups and organizations that include the Highcrest Seniors Home, where I know one counselor, I believe two counselors work, or the warden and the counselor, yeah, and the St. Mary's Food Bank, Shops and Riches. So in December 2020, it was announced as part of an investor briefing by St. Barbara that the timeline for the development of the Cochrane Hill Gold Mine project had been pushed back. So at this point, it is anticipated that the EIS preparations will be completed in Q4 2024 with an anticipated opening of 2026. Again, this is primarily due to the need to focus on the sequencing of all of the expansion projects, and specifically our efforts to advance Beaver Dam and 15-mile stream. So I did want to focus on the environment for a second, and I know that's obviously an important part of our discussions here. So St. Barbara and Atlantic Gold have made a commitment to respect and coexist with the surrounding environment around where we operate, and that includes the St. Mary's River. It is important to note that the Moose River Gold Mine spent over $18 million on environmental protections in 2018-2019, and over $14 million in 2019-2020. So part of that is that in 2019, the Moose River actually completed a massive effort to remediate over 50,000 tons of historic mine tailings, which we would do the same at Cochrane Hill. And that is So we would assume we would be doing the same thing there. All environmental protections around mining operations, including the tailings management facility, are in place and remain strong. A commitment has also been made to bring St. Barbara operations to carbon neutrality by 2050, but Atlantic operations will be leading that charge, and our target is to achieve carbon neutrality by 2025. So just a few of the options that we're working on are solar, wind, saltwater battery technology, some low footprint structures at new mine locations, and battery storage are all in development. And I do encourage you, St. Barbara as a company produces a sustainability report on an annual basis that's available on their website, and I would recommend to go have a look at that, because the commitment is further explained there. And we can talk about it a little bit as we go forward. So as well, of course, we did want to talk about economic benefits of the Cochrane Hill Gold Mine. Studies done as part of the EIS submission include economic impact studies, and normally these studies only look at the provincial and federal benefits, but St. Barbara has also commissioned a study to look at regional benefits. So I did want to cover a couple of things with this. It is important to recognize that the regions studied were St. Mary's, Pictou, and Antigonish. Some of the benefits noted are just for this municipality. However, many needed to be calculated over a wider population base. I did also want to say that our company appreciates that the municipality and the council commissioned their own study to summarize the local benefits of the Cochrane Hill Gold Mine. We want to be clear that we respect the work of Mr. Joseph and his staff. The information we provide today is informed by a more up-to-date information, and we're working with the company that completes our studies to provide a bridge for you between those two studies so that they can make sense together. So it's just important to note that during construction, about a one-year construction period, 213 regional jobs could be created. That's 139 direct, 63 indirect, 300 regional jobs during operation. The salaries at the Cochrane Hill Gold Mine will be about 68% higher than the average salary in the region study. The St. Mary's municipality itself, so this body, will receive about $182,000 a year directly from the mine. The current unemployment rate in St. Mary's, as of the time the study was completed, was about 18.3%, which is about 8.3% higher than the Nova Scotia average. And the $144.3 million construction price tag is the second biggest project on the Eastern Shore, only second to the Antigonish bypass. So also, it's expected that $43 million in local spending will happen during the construction phase, and $75 million in local spending during the operation phase. And I do want to quantify a little bit. The word could can sometimes be worrisome. I think, you know, the piece that we're looking at right now is it benefits us the most to hire local as close to the site as we possibly can. It works both ways. We need to make sure that we have a workforce that's ready to accept the opportunities that are out there, and we look forward to opportunities to work with council to increase the capacity of the local workforce so that more would be willing and able to receive the jobs and apply for the jobs when they come up. So that's a conversation we can have. We're happy to have on an ongoing basis. Home stretch, I promise. I did also, just because we do normally do the studies on the provincial and federal basis, I did want to cover that as well. So it will cover the overall benefits to the municipality, to this municipality, the province of Nova Scotia, and the country overall. But it is important to recognize that these are calculated using common accounting and computational metrics. The benefits encompass both direct and indirect benefits, so not just our own hiring, but the economic activity that's created. So during construction, it's anticipated that over $113 million will be added to the federal economy, and $98.2 million will be added to the provincial, with 731 jobs created within Nova Scotia. And through taxes, it's expected that about $8 million in revenues will go to the federal government, $5 million to the province, and $2.9 million to this municipality. And during operations, it's anticipated that over $31 million federally, 24 Federally will be created annually, 24 million provincially, and in value added, and that about 321 jobs will be created within Nova Scotia. So government revenues will look, that's an annual number of $4 million federally, $4.9 million provincially, and about $700,000 a year to the municipality. So, I hope that we can, I just want to touch for a minute on how we think we can work together with the council here, because knowing what we know and respecting the work that you've done and the seat you're in, I'm hoping we can suggest a sort of mutually respectful path forward for our ongoing relationship. We understand that you, as council leaders in your community, can be placed in some unenviable positions, and we respect and appreciate that the Cochrane Hill Gold Mine can be the subject of heightened passions within the community. We want to aid and support you with solid, independent scientific evidence to inform those discussions. We're asking for you, through the CAO and the warden, and individually, to keep the lines of communication open with us. If you have questions, please reach out. We are here to be open, transparent, and assist where we can. The process for approval of the Cochrane Hill Gold Mine is a stringent one, regulated by the provincial and federal governments, and we ask that you trust in that process. We understand that there are concerns in the community, and we want to address those concerns, all of them. The best way to do that is through the federal environmental assessment process, through IAC and the Nova Scotia Environment. This process allows for all individuals and groups to comment critically and to ask questions. So we would like to present to you again where you have further updates and when the environmental impact statement and all supporting studies are completed. We do value your input and remain open, transparent, and available to answer your questions and those of your constituents. Our company understands that you're tasked to represent the will of your constituents and that the municipality and councillors have a place in this process. However, the decisions you make are best made when all available information is at your disposal. To have that information, we need to have our environmental impact statement and all supporting documentation. So with that, I thank you very much, and we're open to questions and discussion.
Thank you, Dustin. Deputy Warden Fuller has a question.
Skipping back a few slides there, it says the benefits to the community, the initial, then ongoing, the $43 million to $70
million. Yep.
Is that based over how many years?
I believe that would be based over the life of the project, which would be the 6-year, 7-year lifespan.
And local spending.
Right.
What's your definition of local?
I, you know what?
We have one grocery store.
Right.
And that is a lot of frozen pizza.
True. I will get that back to you on, because I don't want to say, I want to make sure that I'm quantifying that properly, but I will provide you that study so that you can have a look at it.
I appreciate that.
Yep.
Warden Weir, you've talked about jobs, these jobs that we're still 5 years out for mines up and running, if everything goes well. We're going to have some, is there young people out there today that could be getting themselves qualified for these jobs? Are you going to offer any kind of education incentives or to work at your gold mine or anything like that? I'm just wondering if you've even thought about that.
I'm going to respectfully head over to our general manager for this one, so take it away.
Yeah, we have looked at that, and we've looked at the possibility of training, perhaps a year or two prior to the mine starting up. I actually was speaking today to procurement to get me a couple of simulators, like a haul truck simulator and a shovel simulator, to do training. And what we'd like to do is come down, put some people through training, and give them a certificate to say when the mine opens up, you're qualified to come in and be trained fully on it. So if you look at the current operation we have just now, pretty much out with the very high tech skills such as geology or metallurgy, everybody that's in there now came in raw, didn't know anything about a mine, and we're producing probably record production just now. And we've trained people from day one, and we'll continue to do so, and it'll be the same here. We've trained people locally to do the jobs. What I found is it's actually an advantage not to hire a 20-year experienced person from mining, because all I get is, I've been doing it that way for the last 20 years, Sonny, and I'll keep on doing it. Whereas we've got a fresh approach here just now. So I've got kids who are mid-20s who are absolutely phenomenal at what they do now. We've been training them for the last couple of years. We've found that's the best way to do it, is to train locals. And we've discovered, with the exception of degree, the geology and metallurgy, we can train anyone. We've proven that now, and successfully too.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions? Quiet lot here tonight.
Yeah.
Is there any plan to do additional drilling to check on the actual in-ground resource that might be there and see if there's any opportunity to expand upon it?
Oh, I'm pressing my button. Oh, there we go. I'm going to allow, like I have control over it. I'm going to ask Jim Millard, our head of
environment. Yeah, I'm not involved in the exploration side of things, but I am knowledgeable about what's going on there. So the ore body that's been delineated to date is based on drilling that happened, you know, between, I'd say, over a year ago, right? And it's been updated. There is some potential for additional. There always is, you know. But I think we've kind of got most of it right now. But there probably will be a little bit some further delineation as we get into what we call a feasibility level study. What we have right now is a pre-feasibility level. So when we get into the feasibility level, we'll be doing more delineation. At that time, we can prove that there's probably a little bit more ore, or perhaps less ore, right? And we still have our regional exploration program that's going on between here and Tukoi, right? It's sort of a line. It's almost a straight, not quite a straight line, but it's a straight line. So we're still doing exploration throughout that area as well. So there is the potential to extend mine life, but there's no certainty on that. So.
Councilor Malloy, I'd like to know, how many people do you think you will be bringing from your other mines to here?
The way the sequence is, 15-mile stream in Cochrane Hill should run concurrently. So I think we'll find that most of the very few that come from our mines, it's basically specialists. We'll be looking to hire relatively fresh, because Beaver Dam comes on stream first. So the mine team that are in Tukoi just now transferred to Beaver Dam. But as we grow, we'll have to hire locally as much as possible. So by the time Cochrane Hill comes on, with the exception of specialists, we'll be looking to recruit as much as we can.
Thank you.
You realize that we all know that the size of the tailings pond that's being generated, the tailings pile, is a big concern. Has there been any, or will there be any consideration of finding maybe potential uses for some of those tailings and reduce the size of that tailings pond or pile? I know that you have a lot of studies going on, or will have a lot going on for the environmental impact assessment. So I'm just wondering if that's something that you would look at.
It's a good question. Sure. I'm gonna head that over to you.
So as we get into the feasibility level, so the engineering starts off fairly broad and general, and then it gets tighter. You know, as we delineate kind of the best options. So there's going to be, we still have to conduct some options analysis of the best location, the best type of a facility. Currently, we're just assuming it's going to be similar to what we have at our Tukoi mine, which works really well. we've never had an incident there or any accidental release to the downstream receivers. It's managed well. We monitor it. It's actually built based on some of the best available practices with regard to tailings containment. So that's what we've assumed at this stage, but we're not quite finished yet because all these additional studies we're trying to do, because we do realize that the footprint and the proximity to the sensitive environments really do lead to the requirement to minimize our footprint or the area of the facility, right? So that's what we're trying to do is to fit what we can into a small area, but also operate safely. As far as use of the tailings, I haven't actually considered that. I don't know what we could use the tailings for exactly, but odds are the tailings will likely stay there. I don't think there will be additional uses for that unless you have something in mind. I'm not sure.
I don't.
Yeah. So the tailings facility will be reclaimed. We're starting that process at Tukoi, within the next year or two, and so we do have studies underway and designs that are being commissioned, so that what we create in the end for Tukoi, and it could be very similar to here, will be a dry cover on top of those tailings, which is an engineered cover to limit any potential contamination from leaching into the environment. Because what we want is to be able to eventually close the facility, and that closure process will take a few years, right, to do. And I don't know if the employment numbers and the benefits to the economy are included in that closure.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, there's the benefits still continue because there's still work to be done, and there's ongoing monitoring and all that sort of stuff. So, for instance, the tailings facility will look like a vegetated field with some shrubs and grasslands and that sort of thing. Other parts of the mine would end up being a forested area, and all this will happen in coordination with consultation with the local community. So the final land use that you would have for these areas will be developed in consultation with the CLC, with indigenous groups, and with the government. So as mentioned already, we have a CLC already underway. And also just here, we would be utilizing that group to determine, and perhaps even setting up a separate group that looks at final land use and provide some advice with regard to what the community expectations would be for closure. But the idea ultimately for the closure is to create a safe and stable landscape and facilities that will require minimal maintenance in the future and be protective of people and protective of the environment. And these sorts of technologies do exist, we're trying to design the very best mine possible in light of the environment that we have around St. Mary's and St. Mary's River. So.
I have a question. I know there was a concern surrounding heavy metals being airborne and released into the environment. Just wondering if there's a response to that, and has your company done any studies regarding general health of people who live in the area during or after your productions have left?
That's mine too. Okay, so we have done we do modeling with regard to what the possible so there's different types of emissions that would come from the mine. One could be probably the biggest one could be potentially dust, right? Dust generated from traffic, the mine traffic, and all that sort of stuff. So what we do there is we do modeling on that in order to keep our fugitive dust within Health Canada guidelines or well below Health Canada guidelines. So we think in those terms immediately. We do the modeling, and based on what the final project is going to look like, because we don't exactly know what it's going to look like yet because those studies are undergoing, underway. So as part of the EIS, we'll be doing that type of it's called air dispersion modeling, that looks at that, right? And if there's an issue, what we'll do is apply dust suppression. So that's what we do at the Tupoi mine, is we apply magnesium chloride, which is similar to road salt. And there's other products that are out there as well that are environmentally protective and even more effective. So that's definitely a concern. So and we are monitored closely. We will be monitored and inspected on that with regard to Nova Scotia Environment. We'll be paying attention to that because they pay attention to that. At our Tupoi mine, we do regular monitoring and have to report those results to Nova Scotia Environment. Incidentally, the modeling is done by third parties, so consultants, not done by us, because it's very specialized type modeling, and we do a similar program here. So essentially, you predict what the results are, you plan for them by introducing mitigation. It could be dust suppression, for instance, and then you monitor to make sure that those mitigations are effective, right? And then if they're not quite effective, then you got to go back and redo it again, right? And make sure it's done properly. Dust is pretty easy to see, right? You know, when you have a dust problem, it's pretty obvious. So at Tupoi, we've been able to effectively manage the dust there quite well, and we don't see that as being a big issue. The other source, I mean, greenhouse gases is another source of emissions, and as suggested, we're on the forefront with regard to St. Barbara right now, where we're mandated to have we're going to have a carbon neutral mine, because that's going to happen after the target date.
Yeah, the target date is 2025, and what we've been testing is saltwater technology from Austria, because I mean it's very easy to generate renewable energy. It's the storage that's the problem, and a lot of the storage is dirty. Lithium is quite a dirty storage medium. So we've been trialing saltwater technology from Austria, which so far has been working really well. We're in phase two just now, and it's looking very promising. So we're looking to do that where we can and bring in renewables as much as we physically can.
When we're up and going in full production for 6 years, how many big trucks in a 24-hour period are going to go up and down the highway?
Yeah, okay, that I can roughly answer right now. We're looking at so essentially the plan right now that we have, and it's still subject to some change. It's not likely to get any more trucks than this, but you know, we're still in that feasibility stage of the operation. 7 to 11 trucks per day is kind of what is in the current project description, and that's a concentrate that we would haul from the mine site to our Tupoi facility for processing, right? That's the current existing project description, and
so 14 to 22, because I got to get here first.
Yeah, so return trucks. Yeah. So seven to 11, and there may be fewer, maybe a little bit more, but we'll have more on that.
Later. A big truck going through the middle of town in the middle of the night. Are we going to try to keep those?
Yeah, we will make a commitment to minimize. I think in our EIS we talk. I'm thinking in terms of 15-mile stream for that one, because it's a similar operation, similar size. We're looking at. Seven to 11 trucks, and what we say there is we will not haul during the nighttime. You know, so we'll keep the haulage during the daytime only. And these trucks are pretty similar in size to the, you know, what you would see hauling lumber and that sort of thing, except they're not quite as unwieldy. They're more contained. You know, so
they're a double truck though, right?
Yeah,
double.
Yeah. Side dumpers typically, right? Yeah, so. But we could end up hauling. It could also be in the form of a tanker type truck as well. So with two, like a B train type thing. Right? So, and we would certainly work with the municipality on developing, you know, what that schedule would look like, and try to minimize the haulage during the busy times. I'm not sure what you guys have in mind with regard to sidewalks and all that sort of stuff in town, but there's got to be. it's got to be a safe operation, right? Mm-hmm. And with the speed limits that might be below what's existing here right now for that, we can impose our own speed limits on our trucks, right, to a certain degree. So.
I don't see anybody else jumping up, so thank you very much for your presentation. And
well, and I just want to say thank you to the warden and to the councillors, and certainly we appreciate the opportunity to present tonight, but also the offer is out if you'd like to join in on a virtual CLC meeting to get in touch with me or with us, and we can make that happen as well, because
That's what about tours?
We're still doing tours, but what I'm doing, just because of our COVID restrictions, the maximum I can do at any given time is 4 people.
That can be through me as well. So if you want to reach out, we can make that work. And I have some pieces that I will send back to the warden and the CAO based on this meeting, and I'll distribute those.
So your presentation, you'll send that to us as well.
Okay. Certainly, in terms of tours, you're very welcome. We'd like you to come and see it. Really good. You know, so as I say, We have very, very, very strict screening processes to get into, and then when we're in, I'll give you an example, there's no more than 5 people in the room at any given time, ever. So we can only take 4 or 2 at any given time because of that reason.
I did the tour. It was very interesting.
Well, thank you.
I'd like to note that a lot of the questions that were asked currently were questions that were asked previously, so you guys are on the same, you know, previous council meetings and such, so yeah, and generally reflective of what we've heard in the community.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks for all the questions.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Thanks very much.
Thanks again.
Yeah, no, thank you.
All right, we'll move on to number 9, other matters of business, heritage property bylaw update, draft number 1.
So the draft was distributed to everybody to have a look at. Any highlights on that we want to touch on? Or?
No, there were a couple small changes. Like, we mostly took a lot of it from the Heritage Properties Act. And we also, the old bylaw didn't have any information in regards to altering or demolishing a heritage property. So that is now in the bylaw as well as some information in regards to the committee. So we put in there, as discussed previously, about the committee of the whole being the Heritage Property Committee. So if you guys had any other suggestions or in some forms, we had 5 different forms in there, just so that it makes it easier for people to apply for those things.
As far as the committee goes, we also have included in there the option of having 2 committee members from outside council, 2 from the general public, but not to tie the hands of the committee if we don't have volunteers to fill those roles, so we can still do the duties of the committee.
And I apologize, I don't think I have provided a copy, a printed copy, for those that get a package. So it is on your iPad, though.
So the process we have to go through, do you want to outline that? We have to do first and second readings.
Yeah, we're updating the bylaw. So we do need to do a first and second reading. If you approve the draft, the first draft tonight, with even if it's minor changes, we're looking to go forward with the first reading, hopefully at the Committee of the Whole. I do have a question to our municipal advisor if that has to be at a regular council meeting or just a Committee of the Whole. So So depending on that answer, we'll either go with the next regular council meeting. Then there's a second reading, and prior to the second reading, we do have to post notification to the public. And if there are no changes within that process to or major changes, then at the second reading, we can approve the bylaw.
So tonight, we're looking for any comments or suggestions from the first draft, which you've had a chance to look at, and basically to go forward, if there's no major changes, to go forward with the first reading tonight.
Is there any additions or anything anybody wants to add to the draft, or do they see anything stuck out? And I think we need a recommendation to approve the first draft of the Heritage Property Bylaw, please.
I'll second that.
Recommended by Deputy Warden Fuller, seconded by Councillor Baker, to have a recommendation to approve the first draft of the Heritage Property Bylaw. Any questions or discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Recommendation is approved. Okay. 9B, date for District 8 Oath of Office.
Yeah, so we're just looking for a date following the election for District 8 to get the oath of office done for that councillor. As per the Act, it has to be 10 days after the election, which is the 16th. So the soonest day we could swear them in would be the 27th of January, which is a Wednesday. So we are suggesting to have a special meeting that evening just to do the oath of office around 6 o'clock. Because I believe there may be another document update at 6:30 from Fathom. So we figured it would take about half an hour. And then that way that counselor could also attend that meeting as well, that session.
Okay. So we need a recommendation or a...
Nope, I don't think
so. Not really.
No.
Just direction.
Consensus of council that the 27th would be acceptable.
Is everybody in consensus with that then, the 27th?
Yep.
Seven p.m. right?
Yes. Six.
Oh, six. Sorry.
Yes.
Apparently, the word wasn't listening.
So, we have consensus
yep.
on that.
So we have consensus on that. We're for go with that. 9C. We have an interim report on inflow and infiltration study. Marvin, can you address that, please?
Sure. The interim report was circulated to the council, and so you've had a chance to have a look at it. Basically, the work done to date includes flow metering and rain gauge monitoring. And so that data will be what was collected. Will be used along with some visual inspections that were done. 55 out of 79 manholes were inspected and rated as far as their condition, good, fair, poor. So we, of those inspected, 24 were in good conditions, 15 in fair condition, and 16 in poor condition. So all of that information will be used along with the other data collected, and more analysis will be done on the flow meter data. The next step will be to do a video inspection of a section of the line, and we met with CBCL and discussed what would be the most logical place. So we have some sections of sewer line that have been inspected before, but what we're missing that we feel might be most important to do would be the section along Sonora Road from the number 7 out towards Sonora, that section of the line, because we know that there is a lot of surface water in that area, and a lot of the water table is very low, basically from the nursing home back through to the brook.
Must have been a swamp at one time.
Yeah. So we're going to do visual or a video inspection of that, and CPCL are working on that. They have to hire a contractor to do that work, so they're working on and getting that set up. And then they will take the information from the analysis from the flow data, and they'll develop some reduction, INI reduction measures, and put some costs around that, and provide a bit of a plan for us to follow that will meet our budget, annual budget requirements. So we've given them, we'd like to have that done as soon as possible, but we told them that really the bottom line is March 31st, because we have provincial funding coming and we need to spend the money by March 31st. So, but I expect to get something in February, mid-February from them.
So my only little concern I had with was the whole draft. We didn't check anything in the whole Sherbrooke Village at all. Like, there's no manholes lifted at all.
Now they're covered because it's a gravel source.
I realize that.
Yeah.
But that's a big area for some infiltration that we're not capturing in the event that we do all this work and we're still having trouble. I guess, I mean, I'm not saying I'll cover them all, but it was, is there a couple strategic ones?
Do some checking on
that we could do? I mean,
we definitely can.
That's just my opinion. That's a big area to think that it's okay just because it's buried.
Yeah.
And we know that the other stuff isn't 100% okay, so is that stuff down there older or newer than the stuff we're looking at? Or, like, I don't know the answers to this stuff, but.
Yeah. I think probably the same vintage down from Main Street down through the village, but I agree that it would be worthwhile locating some of those manholes.
I'm not saying you can do them all, but if you picked a couple strategic ones that you can see some flow, or where you think some flow might be coming, I think it would be beneficial at the time while we're getting it done.
Yeah, and sometimes you can actually see, there was one manhole that had a crack in the bottom, and water is actually shooting up out of the bottom.
Right.
So, I mean, some, you open some of them up and you see, but the problem is pretty clearly. So
obvious.
Yeah, definitely. We can check some of those.
That's just what, a little concern I had with it when I read it.
Yeah, good point.
And now's the time to do it, because there are not many tourists walking around in February.
Exactly.
To fall in one.
And right now there's not a lot of frost in the surface of the ground either, so if we're going to scratch open the
problem. Been very kind up to this point.
Yeah. Okay.
Thanks very much. That was a thank you for your update. And moving on to 9D. We're going to go to an in-camera session, legal matters. Thank you very much for attending.
Thank you, ladies.
Have a good evening. Could we have a motion to go in camera for legal matters, please?
I'll make that motion in camera for legal matters.
754.
I'll second what he said.
Approved. Okay, we're back to your regular session at 8:55 p.m. And I forgot to mention this earlier, but I'd like to commend Josh Ellsworth, president of the student council, in his initiative of the drive-in movie night at Sherbrooke Village. Also, the great support he received from the Whale Sanctuary, Sherbrooke Village, and municipal staff and volunteers. Thank you. Great job. Would somebody like to motion to adjourn the meeting?
I'll go too.
Motion by Councillor Mailman and second by Deputy Warden Fuller that we adjourn the meeting. Meeting adjourned.